With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, hello, and welcome. Well, welcome back, I should say, to the Indie Football Podcast, our second episode of 2018. I'm Ed Mallion, sports editor of The Independent, and I am joined for the first time this year by our chief football writer, Miguel Delaney. Miguel, how are you?
Good, good. Good to be here. Back.
Been a long time since you've been on, I guess, dating back to 2017. What have we had? You went to Swansea last week. How was that? You enjoyed Wales?
Horizontal rain, yeah.
Is that the first time you've been to Wales?
No, I've been a few times.
Oh, you were in Champions League final, of course.
Been to Swansea two or three times. Two Chelsea away fixtures at Swansea in consecutive years, just for the...
No, it's very interesting. Everyone, good to hear. Busy weekend for you. You're at Spurs. What do you make of Wimbledon Spurs?
Just a routine cup tie. Well, I was quite impressed with Neil Ireley speaking afterwards. Yeah. Probably the biggest thing of the weekend for me was the VAR.
VAR.
Come on.
VAR, not
yeah,
VAR.
Yeah, so Jack Bitbrook is with us. Hello, Jack.
Hi, Ed.
I don't usually like to drag in off-air stuff because usually it's legally questionable. But Miguel referred to video refereeing as VAR shortly before we came on air, and me and Jack have had to stamp this out.
It's definitely VAR. In October, I was lucky enough to go to an MLS game of exceptionally low quality between my beloved New York City FC and Columbus Crew. Yes. And in the last minute, New York should have had a penalty. The referee didn't give it. But then the VAR guy on the sideline intervened, and all the fans in the crowd at the New York Mets Stadium where the game is being held started going VAR, VAR, VAR,
oh my God.
As the referee ran over to the screen to look at the decision, realised that it was in fact a penalty, which he then awarded, which bizarrely then David Villa missed. But like, honestly, the buzz of chanting VAR, VAR, VAR was amazing. I cannot recommend it enough. And frankly, if this gets brought in, if this is now part of the English football landscape, we're all better off for it.
I want to call it VAR in the same way that Mesut Ozil, despite his 8 million social media followers, has his little hashtag that he always puts up, yeah, Gunners, yeah, that no one has picked up on. Yeah. Like, it hasn't spread in the slightest.
No, but that's just branding, man. That's just branding.
It's weird that despite the love for Ozil, they got an intense fan base, and no one has taken up on his little hashtag.
I personally, so tonight it's in the FA Cup, or as Miguel calls it, the FA Cup, for the first time. Crystal Palace B team against Brighton second team. That's sure to be an absolute thriller. So no talk about... I mean, it would be funny, actually, I was thinking, if there was just no use for the VAR tonight. Everyone sat there furiously waiting for this thing to happen, and it's not going to happen.
At a little...
explain what you went to.
It was just a demonstration, basically. A Q&A with Mike Riley. He showed us how it works, all when it will be used. And their estimation is that it will be it's usually only required once every 2 to 3 games.
Right. So
I'm broadly in favour, I have to say, but I can appreciate some of the resistance to it. I suppose the one thing they kept emphasising, that it's only going to be used for clear and obvious errors or clear and obvious issues that are missed. But then, even that is some way subjective.
They always say, like, this, if you look at other sports, like cricket, for example, they always start off by saying it's going to be used for an incredibly narrow set of objective decisions. And then, the line always moves.
It's a problem. It is a problem because, and cricket is a great example, and NFL, another one. Two sports where it's got a more mature usage of it because they've had it for a few years now. And probably two sports, I think you could say, where it's more obviously used because they are sports where you have lots of repeated events, in cricket, each ball is like very separated, and in NFL, each down is very separated. But they both have the same problem where it's like, okay, well, so we can see on the TV replays that this was a questionable decision, but originally this is not what the video refereeing was for. But we have the capability to review this. So
that's the thing.
The line starts getting very blurred, and I think we're going to see that in football.
What they said as well, one quote from, I think I used this in the piece last night, was, people have this perception it's going to be used for every single incident that has a shade of grey, when it's the opposite. It's only going to be a black and white incident. But again, I mean, I can imagine some referees would have a different view, say, on, I don't know, Hazard against Bellerin, on Wednesday night.
I wrote a column about that earlier this week. And it's the problem, isn't it? So that incident there, lots of angry people about it. And the question is not, do you think it was a penalty? Do you think it was a penalty?
Yeah, just about.
Jack, do you think that was a penalty?
Definitely.
Producer Matt? Bayrin and Hazard? Yes. Okay, you all think it was a penalty. I actually happen to as well. So it doesn't work quite as well because we all agree in the room. But a lot of angry people who are saying it wasn't. And the question is, not if you think it was a penalty, is can you see why it was given? Of course you can see why it was given. He went for a tackle in the area. He missed it. He kicked the guy's foot. Hazard throws his leg back and he falls to the ground. That's for sure. But you can see why it's given. But that isn't the sort of... The problem is with these things is we're going to have these decisions where fans on one side are going to think one thing, fans on the other side are going to think another thing, but it won't go down to the VAR. And then there are going to be other decisions when, you know, fans are divided and then it does go to the VAR and you get what is notionally the correct decision. But it's the other incident, the one where the fans are going to be annoyed about it. Why hasn't this gone to video?
Yeah.
And we're going to have this boring thing every week.
But the thing there, okay, so beyond the concern for the disruption and slowdown of the game, one of the things that was mentioned was how you don't want to be ruling out a 30-yard screamer because of a 50-50 foul in the box 2 minutes beforehand. And he said in meetings with clubs, a lot of the managers and players stressed that when it comes to kind of the build-up to a goal, it needs to be narrower and they don't want that either. And they pointed out that MLS has kind of, they've narrowed it down to a two-second time frame, so it's not in the 2 seconds before the goal or the kind of the final attacking move. But again, in practice, I suppose...
Can the manager slash coach, do they challenge it, or is it the referee that decides?
The referee hasn't... From what we were told the other night, the referee has no recourse to call for a review. It's imposed upon him. So,
By whom? From where?
From the video centre. Yeah. Which is in Stockley Park, where we were. But the referee is basically just told to referee the game as normal.
Good. Well, I think it'd be funny... Mm. You know, if the refs, like in NFL, they have these little flags they could throw up in the air to challenge it or something.
One of my main takeaways from it was the line that players will be booked if they aggressively was the word he used, do the square gesture. The referees.
That's hilarious because people are going to be doing that all the time.
I know.
Why would you not why would you not do that?
it's like waving the imaginary card, but that's the same principle.
Well, we hadn't planned to talk about VAR, but Miguel's mispronunciation of it was so egregious that we had to. Originally, we came on here, I guess, to talk about three main things, the three major talking points going on right now. One, if you hadn't noticed, the transfer window is open and we've already had a £142 million deal and a £75 million deal for a centre-back. So things are going pretty smoothly. We've had the FA Cup third round, which was, how magical would you say that was on a scale of Disney to Harry Potter?
There were some good moments actually. I was at Forest Arsenal yesterday, which was a great game.
Magic.
I think it was probably good in part because Arsenal took it so unseriously. Like they played, I was going to say their Europa League team, probably a team worse than their Europa League team. And they were taken to pieces by Forest. Like they were, Arsenal were genuinely lucky to get away with only losing 4-2. But it was a really good atmosphere. You know, I think what Peterborough winning at Villa was good. Mm-hmm. Coventry obviously beating Stoke City at home is a great result.
Even nil-all draws in terms of actually results, we're probably... Basically, I suppose it's better than a routine 2-0 win for the Premier League team.
After pointing out that, what is it, before the Arsenal Forest game, so I think was it 4 out of 5 games televised this weekend saw the favourites like the Premier League team not win, which is a good thing. So 3 of those were 0-0s. I don't have a problem with that. You know, I'd rather see a 0-0 where Shrewsbury hold West Ham or whatever than just watch Man United knock off Derby County on Friday night. Like I've got no interest in watching that. Liverpool Everton's obviously the exception, and Palace Brighton's an all Premier League tie, but the rest of them, I think, if you're getting an upset out of it, that's exactly what people want to watch on FA Cup third round, fourth round weekend. Later in the competition, like we get the semi-final, you want to watch Chelsea, Man United, fine. At this point in the competition, what you do want is teams upsetting the odds, right?
Mm.
I think that's fair to say. Stoke lost to Coventry, as you said, Jack. Mark Hughes is gone. I feel like we've been previewing his departure for around 4 months now. Just a quick chat on where do we think Stoke go from here?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think they've got enough good players. They should be ambitious enough for a kind of relaunch with a good young manager. I mean, the betting odds suggest they're going to go for someone more experienced than British or Irish. Mm. which may, you know, can see that's probably what the Coates family want. But I think there is an opportunity there to kind of start from scratch and go in a more interesting way.
There seems to be a bit of an unintended consequence here in terms of the glitz of the Premier League. And obviously it's, you know, now packaged as this huge, very successful, huge global marketing event, this show. You know, best managers in the world, all of that. The chief executive of one club told us how their plans to make it the NBA of football. But yet, because of that, and because of the huge financial incentive to stay in it, it means that a lot of clubs are basically going for these old-fashioned, not necessarily kind of managers who aren't that predisposed to kind of this attacking open football, and it's probably contributed to the situation where so many games we see at the moment are basically just extreme defence against attack.
I was talking to someone who is technically an investor in a Premier League club, but he said that what they're going for, what you've seen teams go for, is they're going for a high floor as opposed to high ceiling.
Mm.
And with the exception, you'd say, is someone like Watford, who went for Silva, where you think that is a manager who could get you into the top eight or so, but it wouldn't have surprised you if they were in the relegation zone either.
Mm.
You know, but a lot of these guys, and you're obviously referring to your Pulis, Pardew sort of crew, the floor is supposed to be higher. It's supposed to be like 17th, but the ceiling is 13th.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And that's what we're looking at here. And I mean, as much as we like to talk about the FA Cup, there are loads of games there. What I think is interesting, Miguel, is that the whole weekend almost was overshadowed by a Premier League rivalry.
Yeah.
And you can't talk about...
The FA Cup game has become a vehicle for...
That's exactly how it is. It became a vehicle for a soap opera being played out. And to be honest, it reminded me of when I was at school and you could go from one kid to the other saying, XYZ just said this about your mum. And that's pretty much how it turned out with Mourinho and Conte. I mean, the most astonishing thing on Friday when Mourinho had the pop at Klopp, and it felt like it was at Klopp, right?
I would have thought it was more Klopp initially, to be honest.
I thought it felt like a Klopp dig, and Conte has chomped on that in a way that you could barely imagine. In fact, let's hear it now from Conte, then Mourinho. An astonishing sequence of events, really.
Maybe he was speaking about himself in the past. Yeah. Maybe sometimes I think that someone forget what said in the past or what which is his behaviors, you understand? And sometimes I think that there is I don't know the name, but demenza senile, when you are a bit come si dice demenza senile? It's very difficult, no? Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you
forget what
you do in the past, you understand?
Only thing I want to say to end the story is that yes, I made mistakes in the past on the touchline. Yes, I will make less, but I think I will still make a few. What never happened to me and will never happen is to be suspended for match fixing. That never happened to me and will never happen.
Amazing. Amazing stuff from both of them. Miguel, I mean, what do you make of it?
Well, first of all, I mean, it was Conte's willingness to have a go. From what I'd heard all through last season, Conte was kind of spoiling for a bit of a go at Mourinho, especially since the incident at Stamford Bridge where Mourinho kind of berated him for celebrating so wildly 4-0.
Why do you think he held back last year?
Speaking to people who know him from Italy, they were very surprised because in Italy he was going to regularly get dispatch. Yeah. It didn't hold his tongue at all. They think that it was maybe due to his command of English because of the new country. But then that was what was so interesting about this as well, because Mourinho wasn't necessarily talking about Conte. I would have thought he was more talking about Klopp given the previous there. But once this was dangled in front of Conte, it was like he couldn't restrain himself. He wanted to have this go.
Jack, the thing is, Mourinho is great at doing all the subtle digs. I mean, they're not subtle, but he's a consistent dig. The thing with Conte, the reason this is so surprising is because he hasn't really done this, and then he's exploded. Yeah. Now, the interesting thing for me is he said the demenza senile line. Mm. Everyone can understand, you know.
It's been repackaged now as amnesia.
Yeah, yeah. And what actually, yeah, he did kind of mean forgetfulness. And if the Chelsea press officer had just got in there and gone, it means he's forgetful. He's forgotten his own, selectively forgotten his own misgivings, his own problems. Then it might have been kind of suppressed. Instead, what we got was Jose hitting back and almost like an all-out war.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think Friday night was probably the greatest ever Jose Mourinho drive-by in the sense that it was personal, vindictive, surprising. That was the best thing about it.
He went there in a way that you wouldn't.
Like Miguel and I were talking about this earlier, there was a kind of 3-minute build-in. You didn't even know that there was going to be a punchline. And then he throws it in. I mean, we all know. I mean, there have been so many of these over the years against Wenger, Graham Lasso, Brendan Rodgers. But they always kind of come out of the blue. You never see them coming. They're never really kind of prompted.
Yeah, yeah.
Although this one was slightly. it's just incredible. There's always something so exciting about a willingness from anyone to go all in with this kind of personal criticism.
The initial barb about the match fixing, which we should stress legally that Conte was acquitted for, but the barb, it was like a master storyteller in some ways, because the YouTube clip of it, I was watching it last night, is 3 minutes and 17 seconds or something like that. And 3 minutes of that are this slow build-up where you don't think it's going. You can't imagine it's going to go in this direction. You know, it's if he's trying to build bridges. He's talking about how Conte's not the... I don't blame the Chelsea manager. There should be apology to me and the Chelsea manager for the way the question was put. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, it's complete 180.
That was so funny.
The most impressed I've been by him all season.
Yeah. It was a reminder that... it was a reminder that he is incredibly good at these kind of like media theatrics. Yeah.
I remember hearing a story that when Mourinho was kind of a student, and they were kind of discussing the ideas of kind of, I think, you know, when he was studying on the lines of kind of PE, and he was discussing, you know, how you manage people, how you coach them, and he was particularly taken with the psychological angle, and was kind of like he was, you know, devouring the information. And in Italy, apparently, in the last few days, now up until yesterday, obviously Conte had his swipe back. But between Friday and Conte swipe back, he was seen like, well, of course Conte lost. He's up against the master of communication.
I remember, something else Miguel and I were talking about earlier, famously in 2011, 2012, Pep Guardiola described Mourinho as El Puto Jefe, the effing boss of the press room, because of how good he is at conducting this kind of thing. And this, you know, it's kind of been lost a bit with Jose recently because he's been so miserable. But this was a reminder of that kind of charisma and power that he wields.
But this is the thing, actually, as well. I think, now, unfortunately for Conte, maybe, and because his English isn't quite as sharp as Jose's, he didn't get it out as strongly enough. But on Saturday, when he started talking about this idea of the cinema, there was the implication there. From the way he was putting it, I thought that, yes, Mourinho's still good in here, but in terms of the football, he doesn't really know it anymore.
But that's a great point, though. It is difficult to articulate. Like, it's really hard to deliver a zinger in a language that you're not really... You don't fully command it. Now, as someone who studied languages at university, like, I have a great admiration for Mourinho's proficiency in numerous languages. Like, that is an incredibly difficult thing to do. And to have the depth of understanding that he has and like the multiple layers of understanding that he has. And that's probably the only way he beat Conte in this verbal joust that we've had, which is almost like a soap opera sort of level of thing. I think that if Mourinho says a lot of these things and people are like, it's a deliberate distraction, whatever. And there have been times this season when that's happened. I said, no, I think he just lost the plot a little bit. But on this occasion, he's absolutely just reeled in Conte.
That was too performative to not be...
And it's astonishing. And, you know, this leads on to the next debate, I guess, which if you saw Sunday Supplement on Sunday, you might have seen a bit of an argument about this. You know, should this be the story? I think it was Henry Winter from The Times saying that this is a distraction from the football and the LMA should intervene. And then on the other side, you've got Sean Custis, head of sport content at The Sun, saying this is the biggest story. Like, you know... Your back page could either be Jesse Lingard plays well again, or it could be who was it on Friday night? Was it Mourinho? Yeah, Mourinho. No, Conte says Mourinho has senile dementia. Yeah. Mourinho hits back at Conte match fixing. Now, as much as we like football, people want people are interested in the story and the soap opera as well.
Yeah. But you can have both. Like it's not an either or situation. Like I was more on Sean's side there, I have to say.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Is it fair to say that because the Premier League is such a foregone conclusion this year, that actually this bit of soap opera is a bit welcome? Because
yeah, a little bit.
Is everyone else tuning out a little?
But also, to be fair, I mean, the football is actually part of this as well, because what is amazing, even for Mourinho, is that two such accomplished, respected, like, you know, essentially masters of their field, really respected men in terms of their sporting achievements, to go this far. Yeah. It's actually, and you're kind of thinking, what will they say next?
Yeah, it's. I mean, the first thing to say is that it's absolutely hilarious. This is the funniest thing to happen in football. I mean, nothing in 2018 will be as funny as this.
Rafa Jose was great and all that sort of stuff. And even last year, we had some phenomenal work, like the Wayne Shaw thing ended up pretty sad, but was funny at the time. But this... Yeah, I mean, this is like...
Even compared to, say, like, Pep versus Jose was never as good as this, because Pep wouldn't go all in, and like Guardiola obviously thinks that all this stuff is a bit beneath him. Whereas Conte's willingness to go all in is what makes it so good.
But yeah. I love this as well, because as much as, you know, we're saying that because the Premier League is kind of a foregone conclusion, this soap opera, this sideshow is actually really entertaining. And the Premier League needed this little sideshow to keep going. The football... takes care of itself. If you're good at the football, it takes care of itself. Because look at Pep Guardiola, the situation he is in. You've got Conte and Mourinho, two of your biggest rivals, at each other's throats in ludicrous fashion. Wenger just got his first ever touchline ban, and it's probably going to get banned even further or something, because that whole situation has just got out of hand with the referees and stuff. He's just got knocked out of the cup. He's under a huge amount of pressure. Klopp just said he won't sell Coutinho, then he sold him. And let's not forget, Mourinho's the first jibe was at Klopp himself. So Klopp's got some stuff to prove. Half of Pochettino's team want pay rises. Guardiola is sitting pretty, and the reason he is sat pretty, the reason he doesn't have anything to answer to, is because his team is so good at bloody football.
But also, this will infuse the football. Like, I think in all the debate about Mourinho, we wonder whether his team have been kind of as emotionally intense as some of his best teams, whereas I think they were in, say, the 2-0 last year against Chelsea, and they're really pumped for this game. And I think this could have a similar effect. I think since this all happened, people got, oh, I can't wait for this Chelsea United game. Now, it's due to be 25th of February. It might be postponed if Chelsea qualify for the League Cup. But you can't not think that this is going to electrify that match.
Yeah. What's really interesting to me is how when Conte was saying that he knows that Mourinho has always been, quote, a little man in all circumstances. And clearly, I think one of the...
That alludes to something.
I think the root of this, or one of the main roots of this, is that, of course, Conte took over at Chelsea 18 months ago from a team which had been absolutely destroyed by Mourinho, confidence-wise, the first half of the previous season. And remember, in the first few games of Conte's time at Chelsea, when they lost 2-1 at Stamford Bridge to Liverpool... I think, and afterwards, Conte was basically blaming it on Mourinho. Mm. He says, when you finish 10th, there is something strange, not natural, not simple, and kept going on about how there was like a big problem in the players' minds. So clearly he knows how bad Mourinho made things at Chelsea.
We're going off on a little bit of a tangent now, but I think you've asked me before, do you think Chelsea's 2015-16 has now been overlooked a little bit too much, that it's been given too much of a pass?
I think that, yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think that that half season is one of the biggest and most interesting and important stories in English football this century. And I think Mourinho has to be held very, very accountable for how bad it went in a way which no other, like, that has never happened before. It's never happened before. Yeah. And it happened on his, it's not just it happened on his watch. He made it happen. It's his fault. And he's not really had to pay a price for that in terms of public, I mean, he's walked into the Man United job. And he's not, even in terms of public accountability. And maybe if Conte is now going for Jose hard, and if they're going to meet again soon, then Conte might be, I mean, I wonder if Conte will decide to bring that up. Because it's, I think, frankly, Jose's kind of gotten away with it during his time at United so far.
Think about, you know, Conte steps into that job. And it is, he's got two things to live up to here. One, the absolute low baseline of that 2015-16 season, where he's shredded the confidence of a team, ripped their, like, soul out, basically. What happened with Eva Carneiro? What happened with all the players there? The players, there are going to be some horror stories that Conte would have heard internally.
Yeah.
That I think you've heard as well. There are going to be some horror stories that he's heard from inside the team. And then, on the other hand, what you've got is this absolutely great side. You know, the historic Chelsea that won everything, basically, under Mourinho. Mm. And he's their most successful ever manager. So, they're fighting, he's fighting with two Mourinho ghosts. The great Mourinho ghost and the ghost of Mourinho awfulness.
But this is the thing as well, then. It's going to, like, especially with how this is going and now how loved Conte is by Chelsea fans. Can you think of a situation where a club's most successful ever manager has been so, I suppose he's now so disliked by so much of their support.
As he says it himself, Judas is still number one. another classic Mourinho moment from the last year or so.
Do you reckon they'll end up like that at Manchester United? Do you reckon what? This is an impossible question to answer. What would Jose Mourinho's legacy be at Old Trafford? Will it be sub Van Gaal? I think he'll be above LVG, above LVG and Moyes. But
see, the one thing about Mourinho, he's better at kind of whipping fans up to support him.
He's done that very well this weekend.
Yeah, again, the siege mentality thing. I think he was much better at that than Moyes and Van Gaal. Obviously, Moyes is a different kind of situation there. I have to say, given what happened at Chelsea, Mourinho has done better at United than I've expected, particularly this season. There's been twice this season where I thought they would really destabilise and fall, and that was in October after the Liverpool game, and then in the last few weeks after this lull over Christmas. But to be fair, he's got big wins since then. So he does seem to have restored the classic Mourinho kind of gritty baseline in that way. I'm still very dubious as to whether he can win a title at United, though. But I wouldn't rule out a Champions League. And if he does that, then he's
golden. It doesn't matter.
Given that there are question marks over certainly Conte being at Chelsea next year, and to a lesser extent Mourinho at United next year, does this spat make you hope they both stay on because it's just so much fun?
Yes, very much.
I mean, Conte with another year of English under his belt, anything could happen. Yeah. You know, I don't even say what he might bring up, but you've got to look at this situation and say, you know, it's probably, I guess it's probably already peaked, isn't it? You know, I
don't know.
I can't see a way that they can accelerate this. Especially,
you know the problem actually is that Mourinho doesn't have a game this week, or not the problem, but Mourinho doesn't have a game. So the next person to speak is Conte. That's tomorrow at his press conference. So there's been no chance for anyone to Mourinho.
He would have been urged to calm it, I think. Obviously by the club. When it's after a game, no one speaks to you between the final whistle and the reporter talking to you in the tunnel. So there's less guidance. When you're sat at the press conference at your own training ground next to the press officer, it's less likely that, I mean, unless Conte's gone full Rafa, if he turns up with a sheet of paper and he starts listing poking Tito Villanova in the eye, like all these things, then, you know, clear your desk, because this is going to be, we're going to be in all night. It's just going to, it's going to kick off in a massive way. But I think what we've all agreed is it's important not to be sanctimonious about this. It's been very entertaining at a time when the Premier League probably needs it, and probably when the FA Cup. So does the FA Cup benefit from this, or does, because people are at least still
it's showing the narrative power of the Premier League, basically, that ultimately,
which is the FA Cup's biggest problem.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly.
Well,
like,
all he suggests is how to fix it just pale next to that.
Yeah, like, exactly, like the Premier League is hegemonic, and it's kind of eaten the FA Cup in the same way that it's eaten the English national team or whatever else, and there's no there's kind of no escaping from that. Mm. And the fact is that the FA Cup, just like you said, it's been subsumed into a kind of platform for Premier League rivalries.
Does anyone bar a Norwich fan care about the nil-all draw that Chelsea had on Saturday? Can't they probably because they have a replay, but
yeah, I mean, they're probably complaining about the fixture congestion, but at the same time, it's going to be Ethan Ampadu, Charlie Musonda, and all the chaps playing. You know, it might not be that big a deal. Before we go, I think we probably given way more time than anyone else would have done to that particular spat, but it was entertaining. A little bit of transfer window talk, just because we are in the transfer window. You only get probably four podcasts during the transfer window, and it's something that we've talked about the other day, actually, is that people love transfers. There is that, it's that constant hope of your team getting better. It's the reason everyone loves young players. It's potential and hope rather than the reality.
Exactly,
Because it's like, oh, the reality might be 6 out of 10, but what if he becomes 9 out of 10 in the future? Yeah, yeah. Now the reality is next week he'll be on loan at Fleetwood. But that's always the hope. So, roughly speaking, I think we can say that the biggest deal of this transfer window has already happened.
Yeah, the two biggest, one we expected maybe Van Dijk, and the other one that was not quite. I mean, I was surprised.
Even a week or two ago, we would have been surprised that it was going to happen so fast, so quickly. He's actually out injured for 3 weeks now, Coutinho. Barcelona have announced today. Mm. I think everyone's written extensively about, you know, why this is good for Barcelona now, why this is good for Liverpool now, etc. What do we expect Liverpool to do this month? It feels difficult for them to get a like-for-like replacement.
Yeah, they did want Lamar and have when I'm been looking into that. That could be difficult, though, especially given how tough Monaco are to negotiate with. There have also been murmurs today that they'll try and bring the Keita deal forward, which...
And Leipzig have said they won't do that, but they also said they wouldn't sell him before. So we'll be interested to see what happens there. Alexis Sanchez sounds like Arsenal and Man City have at least been talking over the weekend about that.
And the other side of that is basically how, not problematic, but obviously Wenger was determined to keep Sanchez in the summer to push for Champions League and all this, but probably hasn't quite worked out how he's imagined. There's been dressing room issues.
It's weird. I remember Wenger clearly had high expectations of Sanchez and Ozil's performances, given they were staying. And Ozil has, to be fair, proven Wenger right by playing really well. But Sanchez has been absolutely awful.
Which one of you was at Arsenal Palace the other week?
Me. Yeah, he scored two goals against Palace. But he's like, there's no point in being there.
And also
his teammates hate him.
Yeah, so a lot of players have been saying things off the record. The journalists kind of like
that. That's the problem, is that there's obviously an issue, like a personal thing.
Did you see the Elneny tweet last week? Elneny was, he did a tweet about for the new year about all the Arsenal players that will be going to the World Cup, and then at the end of it, sorry, no place for you, Alexis Sanchez. Now, apparently, I probably shouldn't really be looking into this, but however,
go on.
Sanchez unfollowed them off Twitter or Instagram, wherever it was.
Astonishing scenes.
But as trivial as that is, it does point to kind of this, how petty, or not petty, but some of the issues with Sanchez in that dressing room.
Arsenal really in a bizarre situation now. I just don't even know what to make of them anymore. There is still the chance they could win the Europa League, the League Cup, and
finish sixth.
Which we call the Jose Mourinho treble, which would be an interesting way for them to... I honestly think they have to win the Europa League this season. That has to be their aim, surely. Because
I agree.
What on earth?
It'll be interesting if they do the kind... I remember last year, obviously, United made that switch, didn't they, in about March or April, from playing their good players against in the Europa League and their bad players in the Premier League. It'd be interesting to see if and when Arsenal make that same switch.
But I think you're completely right. I mean, Wenger's never won a European trophy. Yeah. And that does, I think, well, obviously the one he wants is the Champions League. But still, to have that European trophy as your career is kind of a proper signpost for it. And then secondly... It's a way back into the Champions League.
Yeah, I'd say, to be honest, this is a huge week. They have to be, having played their bad players the other day, they have to play their best team against Chelsea, and they have to get a result. If they get hammered against Chelsea and they're out of the League Cup final, then the season narrows even further.
If they sell Alexis Sanchez, do you think they'll buy in January?
Yes. Although,
you're going to be getting a downgrade.
Yeah, well... I mean, if it's a half interest, it's Sanchez. Obviously, it's a downgrade from peak Sanchez. But if they can't have that, there's been murmurs again today about Mahrez.
Wasn't Wenger quite damning of his fringe players after the game?
He was actually damning of the senior players. So he pointed out they had 8 or 9 senior internationals out there. Like they had, you know, Walcott, Welbeck, Elneny, Debussy, Ospina, who was actually their best player.
Do you think the likes of Walcott, who I was at Fulham Southampton on Saturday, Mauricio Pellegrino did suggest that, well, he called it, you know, he did the usual thing where you compliment a player that you obviously want to sign. After a performance like that, do you think Arsenal are going to be more willing to let Walcott go? But can they if they sell it?
I don't see why they played Walcott, because it would have made him cup tied.
Mm. Yeah, but do Southampton care about an FA Cup tie?
Yeah, probably not. Also, I don't really know why Walcott's still there.
This is a bit of a tangent, but why does cup tie rules still exist? I mean, if we're talking about the Premier League being the biggest event, and you're obviously not going to be cup tied for that, like,
you're right. There is no reason they should exist.
Yeah.
If we're ranking rules that I think should be phased out, it's not top. Away goals. Away goals would probably get
binned
first.
Yeah, away goals is the worst one.
I think, who was it? Ian Hawkey, I think, in The Blizzard. He searched that out, wrote a brilliant thing on why the away goals rule is absolutely
nonsense.
The
one thing I think that away goals can be good for is that it can add that extra tension. But the problem is, when a good away goal is scored, then that tension evaporates in the game.
Yeah, and also, but you're absolutely right, it does increase the tension, but it increases the tension by, like, rigging the game.
Yeah.
By saying, if you score a goal under these circumstances, that goal would count double.
In the Libertadores, in World Cup qualifying, I completely would have away goals. I just think in modern Europe, in the Champions League, you don't need it. I just don't think, and there are exceptions.
The game's too homogenised, right?
You know, like, if teams were having to change plane twice, like, and drive, you know, the famous one into Barcelona where Jose Mourinho beat that incredible Barca team because Barca had to drive on a coach through the Alps because of the Icelandic ash cloud. That sort of thing, like back in the 1960s, 70s, that was normal. Mm. You're having to undertake these awful journeys, and away goals should count double.
And the big one then, of course, was that, you know, they'd be stepping onto a pitch, say you're playing like in Poland or whatever in the 1960s. And it was difficult to scout these teams. So there was an element of the unknown. And I think that was basically teams would play defensively just by nature. Well, we're on this pitch we've never played on before in uncertain conditions against a team we don't know. So we better be cagey. Then maybe. And so the away goal was obviously to kind of draw teams out in that sense.
I was reading something a while back on it. It was like, what was it, 67, 68 Intercontinental Cup, Racing against Celtic. Mm. And they're saying, like, they've never seen the first 20, 30 minutes of the first game was trying to work out who on the other team was good.
Because
you've never seen this team before. And it's like, if you're the right back, you know, do you want to push up? Because, like, the guy on their left wing could be their best player.
Yeah, yeah, he could certainly have a burst of pace.
He could be awful. Yeah, he could be someone playing out of position. You just haven't got a clue. But this is way off topic. So,
back to what were we talking about?
The transfer window. Chelsea, do you think they're going to do anything this month?
Well, I've got Barkley in. I think that he still wants a wide player. Mm-hmm. I think he still wants a striker to supplement, or basically someone to start when Morata can't, because he clearly doesn't trust Batshuayi in that situation. But then there is an issue there because, well, A, Conte himself might leave at the end of the season, and B, he wants to bring in experience, whereas Chelsea have this policy of basically bringing in 20, 25-year-olds, for like the Real Madrid policy.
Yeah.
And I mean, he does want Vidal, but they've got Barkley instead. So
yeah, if you think your coach is going to walk out at the end of the season, I wouldn't
let
him have a say over transfers anyway. It's, you know, it just doesn't make sense. United, do we think they're going
to
do anything?
They want to. They want to bring in two.
Are they still after that defensively minded wide player?
Yeah, yeah.
Where else do they want to strengthen?
He wants a left back, even though Shaw has come on.
Yeah, yeah.
But he still wants one. Although I think,
do you think they will bid what they need to bid for Danny Rose?
I'd heard he'd gone a bit cool on Danny Rose, and there's also the issue of dealing with Levy. He'd be leaning towards Malcolm or maybe Sandro for the summer. So there is a possibility that United will actually do no business this summer, but even though they want to.
You mean this month?
Sorry, this January.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think of the other clubs we missed out.
Liverpool.
Liverpool we've talked about.
City will do a centre-half as well.
Watford and Palace are battling out for goalkeeper. We've got Brighton certainly want to get a striker in. I think they could stay up if they get someone. If they just get a goal scorer, he gets probably between 7 and 11 goals.
They're actually
in the second half of this season,
and there's probably peace in this. There are about 10 clubs. Now, this might be quite obvious, and that's about 10 clubs that need a goal scorer.
The entire bottom half, basically.
Yeah.
every club almost is looking for a striker. And that's why Atletico Madrid let Luciano Vieto go out on loan last week to Valencia. No Premier League club goes in for him. Just absolutely astonishing. You've got a guy who at Villarreal was brilliant. And if you gave him a run in the team, again, he might not score goals, but what you're doing at the moment. And the upside of this guy is a guy who scored like 15, 20 goals in a La Liga season. He's 23 and you can buy him for €15 million at the end of the season.
That's good as a Barclays,
an Argentina international.
That's good as a Barclays.
Yeah, well, you can the Barkley deal.
I mean the Premier League.
Oh,
the
forget it.
I'm joking.
the Barkley deal, by the way. Who will be happier in 18 months' time, Ross Barkley or Everton? Who'll be in a better position? Because I think it'll work out better for Barkley.
Even though Conte doesn't seem to really want him, I think if he gets enough time with him. Conte could be really good for Barkley.
What sort of player would Conte make him? Where would he play?
He'd probably use him in one of the attacking positions, wouldn't he?
What, as a kind of like...
Or maybe he's a kind of an eight. I mean, that was the initial
intent. But they don't really play, like... I just can't see how he fits
in the 3-4-3.
He doesn't fit in the 3-4-3. Yeah. And I don't really... If they play the 3-5-2, he's not as good as Fabregas.
To
be fair, there's already been a few... Victor Moses has been the classic... Yeah. A few players who Conte, he's like, well, what's he going to do with them? And he's done something that we haven't expected.
You'd never believe Victor Moses would have become top right wing back.
That's fair enough.
But I think Barkley could play on the right or left of the front three, kind of where he's used Willian sometimes. And I think at a push,
maybe, he's quick enough.
Against weaker opposition at push, you could use him. I think you'd probably play him there in games where you're going to be up against a low block, basically. Where, you know, he's not going to be Pedro stretching the field, but what they're going to be sat back and you're trying to work through them. I think that's probably more where they see him. Has he got the legs to be in the midfield too? Against weaker opposition, possibly. You know, the replay against Norwich, if he's fit in time, would be kind of a good game to try him out, I guess. But I fundamentally think that Conte is one of the better coaches in the league, so I would trust him, his development with him. And I think the Everton thing hadn't worked out. I'm not sure...
It seems like he needed a change, though. Yeah, the Everett, it's been odd. In terms of work, what he can do with Barkley, basically, though, I suppose the ultimate issue is we aren't the tactical or football mind that Antonio Conte is. So,
yeah, no, absolutely. So
he can see something that we can't.
We've probably gone on for quite long enough. Unless there's any other business you'd like to attend to today. Murph, anything you'd like to add? No. Miguel?
I'm interested, actually, in the dynamic between Murph and Andy Carroll.
Andy Carroll?
Yeah. At West Ham.
A blossoming love.
Yeah, blossoming love, yeah. Do you want to come
on? Producer Matt did actually say that he wants Andy Carroll in the England squad, which is an opinion that gets regurgitated every 2 years just before a tournament.
There's quite a difference in...
I'd love to see you standing next to Andy Carroll.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be quite...
He didn't need a box to stand on.
On which note, we will say goodbye.
Tyrion Lannister and Sansa Stark.
Thank you.
Am I allowed to say that?
We can say that. That's not copyright. Thank you for joining us. As always, listener numbers continue to go up, which is better than them going down. So we thank you for that. Thank you for Miguel for joining us, for being in the country this week.
Thank you.
We'll see you next week. Jack, as always, a stalwart. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Ed.
And producer Matt in the corner, crossbowing someone on the toilet. We'll see you next week.